Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. It's podcast time. And this week, I have got the one and only Sonny Wharton. Sonny, I have known for over 10 years. I've known him as DJ, producer, record label owner. And he is now an artist manager, looking after Gene Farris, Charlie T and Jess Bays, and doing a very good job at it. He's been successful in everything that he's kind of put his mind to over the years, and also alongside that been one of the nicest guys in the industry. Sonny signed one of my first records on his record label Wartone, and being part of the Wartone crew kind of just made some really close proper friends in the industry that of just like always, we're still friends. There's a bunch of us that are still friends, and people that have their careers have stopped in music, and people's careers that have grown in music. And it was just an amazing part of my career and my life. So I thought I'd get him on and have a good conversation. So without further ado, Sonny Wharton.
And we are live. Sonny Wharton, what's cooking, man?
Sorry I'm late, mate. I guess no point in changing things now. After
used to it. Not too late, though. Only like 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes is...
kind of. I was going to send you the link earlier and was like, mate, if you want to jump on earlier, let me know. And then I realised it's you that I'm talking to. So it's like,
you know, the bad thing is, no jokes, even my dentist tells me a different time to what time my actual appointment is, because I've never been on time for 30-something years. This is another thing. Some of my best friends, so I play badminton every week with some of my best friends. I've been doing it 20 years. And I've been to school with them and everything. And no jokes, only a few weeks ago, I found out that they've been telling me a lie for all this time. Because I went to book the court and I was like, it's 5:30. And the receptionist was like, we don't do any at 5:30, it's 5:40. And I turned around and basically, yeah, they've been telling me 5:30 for all these years. And I've never been on time anyway, but I've only been like 5 minutes late or something because it was actually later than they told me.
So that's when you know you got real friends.
Real friends, and clearly a timing issue. So apologies to everyone I've ever been late for, which is a lot.
Forever, your whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, life goes on.
Indeed. How are you? You back in the UK right now?
Yeah, man, got back yesterday. I got some good sleep last night, which was a nice change.
We come back from New York.
Yeah, I was in New York. Yeah. Montreal and New York this weekend, which was good fun, to be fair. Mate, all these transatlantic flights, you had it the other day going back from Miami. How did you find it?
Weird. It's been a minute since I've done it. So I'd forgotten what that deficit's like. And the fact that you kind of lose a day as well, because you're going, you know, you're going back or forwards in time. But yeah.
Yeah, I always try and get red eyes to sleep combat over that. Yeah, so you just like,
yeah, that's what I did
with pass my out, and then you're good to go.
In theory, yeah,
supposed
it goes to plan.
But then you can't really do that going to America. So you have to like leave in the morning, and then you get there in the morning, and you're like, or in the afternoon, you're like, oh.
Yeah. And that point where you'd like to unwind, actually everything's about to start going and you're like, yeah, this is going to hurt.
My parents are in Australia at the moment and I just feel for them because that jet lag is not fun at all.
Yeah, it hits you hard when you're over there. I used to do Asia a lot as well.
Yeah.
It's like 9 hours ahead or whatever. And yeah, I always used to stay in the UK time zone
there. Oh, did you?
Yeah. So, I mean, the trips were quite short. Like I know it sounds mad saying it now, but like, Korea or whatever I do, so you know I'd be there and back within 48 hours sometimes. Yeah. So I'd just stay in the UK time zone, and then it's quite good actually because you know you set at 3 a.m. it's like tea time here.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I feel great. You do the set and then you finish up and it's actually like a normal bedtime.
Yeah. I've never tried that.
But yeah.
I've always just gotten into the normal time zone of that. There we go.
Sorry, mate. That's not a good start. Probably a really bad pause face. Obviously, that won't work on the audio version, but anyone watching YouTube will just...
I'll edit that out, mate. It wasn't pretty sight.
Yeah, cheers. Never is, I'm sure. Time zones, like, it's... I've always tried to say in the UK one, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I guess it depends how long you're there for. If you're there for a couple of weeks, you've got no choice, really. But,
yeah, I've never tried the whole stay on UK. I just don't know if I could do it.
It hurts less if you're there short time.
When you come
Australia
back.
Australia was one that really kicked me, that knocked me for six. But yeah, everywhere else.
Yeah, I think also there comes a point when you're just like, you're just so used to it that you're just like, okay, I'm just going to sleep when I can sleep and then just crack on.
But yeah, definitely recommend that bit.
It's not good for the health at all.
No, it's funny, and it's one of those things that, obviously, as we get older, you're still very young, but you realise how important sleep is.
I'm not that young now. I've got greys in my beard, and if I grow hair, I'm silver fox as hell. Like,
mate, I still can't even grow a beard. No jokes. Like, it's got to a point where
do you shave?
I do have to shave, but
how many times a year?
Once a week, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I can't grow a beard. I mean, like, I can grow really bad sideburns. Like,
yeah.
This is probably awful content for anyone watching, but it never joins up in the middle.
Does it not?
No, it's surreal. Yeah, I just look like a really bad Wolverine.
I saw a guy, and you know, so a lot of these guys are getting, like, tattooed heads to, like, the tattoo. Yeah. Did I show you in Miami, the guy? Did you see him?
Is that the one with the...
Yeah.
The sideburns that were tattooed on, yeah.
Tattooed
his
sideburns on.
I didn't block it until you pointed it out either.
Yeah.
I just, you know, like peripheral vision, you just sort of presume that's his hairline. And then you're like, dude, he's got that tattooed on.
It's dedication to the hairlines.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't know how I feel about it. Just like, just go bold. I was in denial about going bold for years. It was only after lockdown.
They're all gone. Like, I haven't seen your hat.
Yeah, everything's gone. Just like fully bold.
I was going to say it's probably less maintenance, but then you're making up for it with a beard. You've got to look after that.
To be fair, though, I actually have to shave my hair more than I used to cut it.
Yeah.
So like, I shave my head like twice a week now. Probably more than you shave your beard.
That's my reality chat right there. So, yeah.
Oh dear.
But obviously I did it in reverse. I had a shaved head for all those years.
Yeah, you
and none
did,
of my friends
you?
Actually told me how awful I looked, and I decided to grow hair back. And
Good times. We should probably get into some music talk because I think everyone's gonna be bored about listening.
Yeah, I was gonna
to
say
that.
Sorry, yeah, well, time zones and facial hair. So
I've known you probably like you signed my You were one of the first, oh my God, I can't talk. You literally were one of the first people that signed me. What was it? Was it Buster?
Buster, well, there were a couple
before that, yeah.
Buster was that real pivotal moment, yeah. I think, when you sort of really start to define what would become your sound, I guess.
But I want to talk about before Wartone Records and before I knew you. To start with, anyway, how did, like, where did it all start from you? How old were you? What, like, what was the deal?
How far do you want to go back? Like, getting into DJing or kind of it becoming a real career, I guess?
I feel like it's the transition. So, like, I think what a lot of people like to hear about is how the transition went from how we got into it to a full-time job. Because I think that's the toughest part in this industry is, like, what is
the moment.
Although that was like it's so different nowadays to how it was back then.
But then you had lots of these.
And literally exactly.
Any, USBs. Exactly. So I mean, you know, a similar sort of story to a lot of people, you know, get into it in school and discover discover dance music and, you know, and DJs and never really look at it as a, I guess it's a bit different now because it is clearly a viable career. But, you know, at that point, kind of don't think necessarily this could be a career path. But I was obsessed with it and I just tried really hard locally. I'm born in and brought up in Mid Wales where there wasn't a big club scene in any way.
So you're actually Welsh?
I am, yeah. According to Wikipedia as well. So
someone's
it's official.
Gotta be.
I am Welsh. My parents are from London, but I'm Welsh, yeah. But like the scene was just a typical sort of local scene, you know, one or two clubs, a little bit going on, but nothing to the level of, you know, the scale of the UK club scene. So it was really hard to kind of break through in any way. I played as much as I could locally, and that was purely just through pushing hard and hustling to try and get anyone to give you a slot. And I guess a real pivotal moment was I just decided to go out to Ibiza for the season. I didn't have any contact. I mean, you know, you'll know the story yourself having done it, but I didn't have any contacts or anything out there. And I was just like, I need to be where the scene is. So I took that leap and did it. And the irony was, I try and keep it short rather than boring people with it, but I had what at the time felt like a big break in the UK. It did come into play, ironically, you know, the back room of a big 12-hour event, basically, you know. But to me, that was a big gig because, you know, there's all these big names on the lineup and someone's offered you the chance to play, you know, room two for fuck all. But I'd already committed to going to Ibiza. So 2 weeks into being in Ibiza for the season, I had to fly back to the UK to play this show. As I'm sure you can imagine, it was awful, got messed around.
Yeah.
Most didn't play, ended up playing, had 20, 30 of my mates there. You know, classic scenario where you sort of start questioning what you're doing with your life by the end of it. I sat back at the airport to fly back to Ibiza and I bought a DJ mag. And in that copy, which I wouldn't have bought if I was still in Ibiza, in that copy was a competition for Renaissance. And they run it. They had a party at Amnesia that year and they were running a competition for someone to play the terrace because obviously they had Digweed and people like that in the main room. They wanted like house and the terrace. So I'd recorded a mix to take out to Ibiza and I had some of them left at home. So I phoned my dad before I got on the flight. I was like, can you send this CD to this address, please? Don't add any embarrassing letter or anything with it. You know, just put the CD in an envelope and send it to this. And he did, and I didn't think much more of it. Got on the flight. A couple of days later in Ibiza, my phone rang. It's back in the days of pay and go.
That must have cost a fortune.
Well, this is it. I almost didn't take it because I didn't have much credit on my phone, and it's an unknown number. And I was like, if I answer this, it's going to wipe out all my credit. I didn't have any money. I was in Ibiza for the season.
Yeah.
You know, classic sort of situation. But I took it, and it turned out to be Renaissance, Marcus James at Renaissance.
Amazing.
Saying, we love a mix. Can you play the opening party next week, basically? So that was a long story, but that was the sort of, I guess, real pivotal moment. And the point is, if I hadn't have gone and done that shit gig, I wouldn't have bought the magazine. I wouldn't have read that. So, you know.
It's so mad how life is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like those little things in those, you never know. Like how, I think it's that kind of thing, is that you kind of got to say yes to everything for a certain amount of time in your career.
I think so, yeah. If a door opens, at least have a little look through it.
Peek through, yeah. So then on, you were became resident in at Renaissance, or were you just doing...
Well, so yeah, quite a lot happened that summer. So similar time, I got a chance, thanks to Lucy Coates, actually, who's Andy Mack's manager. But at that point, she wasn't. She was just starting out, but she connected me with someone to give me a slot, like a trial slot at Manu Mission.
Yeah.
So I ended up playing at Manu Mission every week as a resident there.
That's always a trip there.
Great. In hindsight, it's unreal what went on there.
Have you heard it's coming back?
I've seen some rumours. They've got a book coming, and yeah, it'd be good if it does. Is it definitively happening?
I don't know, but I was told the other day that it might be coming back.
Makes sense. It makes sense.
It's time.
It is time. I think it'll blow some people's minds if it comes back on the level it did as well.
Well, this is the thing. Sorry to go on a tangent. I was talking to Ryan about this the other day, and everything, and this is no disrespect to the promoters out there, don't get offended if you hear this, but everything out there is so medical and just like PC and
it's very safe.
And not willing to like offend anyone or kind of open people's eyes to,
I guess, push the boundaries a bit.
Yeah, and that's all what parties used to, was about back then.
And yeah, especially in that hedonism sort of time.
Yeah, and the thing is, it wasn't even that long ago.
There's a bit more than 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, but they were still going 10 years ago, I think. Were they?
No, Manu Mission went, no.
When did Manu Mission finish?
I don't know, but...
I was 20, so 11 years ago, it was still happening.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, possibly. So this summer we're talking about now, it's 20 years ago, this year, 2002.
That started.
Yeah, for me.
Damn.
Yeah. I know, I'm officially old.
Still look like a baby, mate, it's fine.
It's that lack of beard, I guess. When that kicks in, I'm done.
Yeah. So you had a busy summer that year.
Yeah, it's mad. Literally 0-60.
Yeah.
Annie Mission every week, Amnesia for Renaissance, did guest mix for Radio 1 for Annie Nightingale.
Mm.
And then came back to the UK after that summer. And obviously you wanna go full throttle into it. Yeah. You're like, cool, this is what I want to do. You know, how do I make this a career? So I didn't go back to work. That became my full time.
What were you doing for work then?
Prior to that summer, I was working for a sound and lighting company, and we'd do installs of sound systems, or we'd do like try hires to events and stuff. But again, though, that's how I mentioned Lucy Coates, who helped with the Manu Mission thing. That's how I met Lucy.
Yeah.
Theo Touche at the time became Fake Blood. He was playing an event we were doing the sound system for, which allowed me to give her the mix CD, which allowed her to help me open that door. So, yeah.
That's cool. And then coming back to the UK, when was it that you were like, okay, I need to make music?
I would say that's the mad thing. It was very, very different time.
You were a DJ for 5 years or so,
didn't produce anything. I didn't have to, because I got a break as being a DJ.
Yeah.
And as mad as that sounds, like being a DJ and just being a DJ and getting booked for just being a DJ.
There wasn't many people that did that, and there's barely any now. Like, who is it? Carl Cox. Who else?
Well, so at that time, you had people like James Abeley. You know, I'm talking about like DJ, you know, real technically skilled DJs.
James was great.
Yeah, he's still great. Is.
Yeah.
You had people like that really, you know, blowing up, dominating. Youssef, people like that were coming through.
Yeah.
Nick Fanciulli. We had this whole sort of movement at that time that was called like Mix Mag Future Heroes, and there was loads of people in it. Nick was one. Fergie, who obviously was on here.
Yeah.
He was probably one of the biggest names at the time.
Pin-up boy, wasn't he?
Yeah, and rightfully so. And it was so I was probably at the tail end of that sort of wave,
what,
I guess.
What were you playing?
House. Tribally techie house, not tech house as you know it now, but that sort of darker house with a little bit of a like funk sort of undertone,
like actual tech house.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't cheap,
yeah, that was just a burn on current tech house. Yeah.
You know, I wasn't uber cool in any way. I wasn't, you know, sort of really setting the underground alight, but I wasn't in any way commercial. I was kind of sitting in that middle void, I guess.
What was uber cool then, though?
It's all subjective, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of why I ask it, because it's like, I feel like there's always an underground and there's always like the cool kids, but I feel like more so back then there was less of that.
Yeah, there was. It was definitely more open-minded.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, I don't know, you know, I could be wrong. I've always had a, you know, my theory is it's dance music. Does it make you want to dance? Yeah, it doesn't matter what that is to you. Like, how do you feel? Are you enjoying it? Wicked.
Yeah.
No one cares how the kick drum was created, or you just dance into it, and it's subjective what you do or don't like, I think.
Well, so, it's really an avenue for people to escape reality. That's my view on it. And
yeah, it is.
I think the politics behind it all is for us to deal with ourselves. But yes, yeah, it's very strange. It's very strange how it all works, where it's very clicky, it's very all of that. But in the grand scheme of things, forward fronting, it's escapism. And that's what it should be.
I don't know whether it's the business side of it that forces stuff to be boxed up so that it can be packaged and sold, possibly.
I think it is, because everything has to be sold and marketed in a certain way. And a lot of people don't look at things where we can, just generally in the public, right? Like if you go and buy that black hoodie, you're buying that black hoodie. They're not trying to sell you a black, a pink, a yellow one. They're trying to sell you that black hoodie. It's the same with music. It's the same with, like, how do you package all of this music up? Same with playlists on Spotify and Apple Music. It's like, okay, this is the house music one. The house music isn't actually just loads of different genres of house music. It's in the parameters of whatever today is.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's anyone's fault. I think that's just how society is. And I don't think that's ever going to change.
It's not. I do feel, though, with music specifically at the moment, we're in a new era, like, and a good one. Like, it's kind of, I don't know whether, I guess classically, timing, you see it over the years, something happens and it kind of resets things a little bit. And in this case, the pandemic, I guess, has allowed a whole new wave to come through. They were coming through anyway, I think, but it's definitely widened the net a bit, and it just feels like a fresh energy again at the moment to me.
I don't know if I agree with you to a certain extent. I agree with you.
No wrong. There's still the old guard keeping tight control of certain gates. But
I think the thing that I disagree with you on that is that it's still very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're, as an artist, you're almost expected to fit in a box.
Yeah, I agree with that, but then, not that I'm trying to argue with you in any way.
No, I'm down for an argue. Bring it on.
I mean, you have got multi-genre artists coming through that are just DJs. They're not producing music.
Who?
Lala. She's a great DJ. Very, very forward thinking, but still the voice of this generation.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of producers as well. You've got Absolute, people like that, but there's just a whole.
She's a radio DJ. Lala's a radio DJ as well, right?
She's got a show on Rinse, I believe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, she does. Yeah,
but I just think there's a whole wave of people, like, there's 20, 30 new artists that are just coming.
Yeah,
up,
no, I totally agree. I think there's some amazing artists that have come through lockdown. I totally agree. I think more so my argument against that is that it's not necessarily not allowing new people come through. It's not allowing interesting music to come through rather than
I do feel like there's a change coming. I do feel it's been very linear for a long time. And what we've not had, obviously everything's goes in full circles, really. What we've not really had is, do you remember that sort of mid-noughties shake-up where you kind of had that electro...
Yeah.
Sort of justice, Daryl Alken, digitalism kind
Block
of era.
House. Yeah.
We haven't had anything like that on this...
No, this. And that's that. I think, I guess the closest thing to that was the tech house craze that's kind of happened and happening and turned into EDM to a certain extent.
Yeah, it has. But I kind of feel like that's just replicated almost that, what would have been probably that possibly funky house kind of era of the noughties.
Yeah.
It's been tech house this time around.
Yeah, it happens in circles, right? But I think, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, like, the majority of people love that music. That's why all these artists are so popular. So you can't hate on it, if you know what I mean. But I think what happens when we have to look at what we're listening to consume our music, and the places that we're consuming our music isn't necessarily supporting the smaller genres, the little
That's fair. That's coming fair. Through. It's only what's visible to you.
Yeah.
And then you lose out of that. And if you don't know that X, Y, or Z exists because a certain store or radio station is not presenting that to you, you don't know any different. So you're right.
And I think that's our job as, like, how many times when you were growing up and still now did you turn on Pete Tong, Annie Mac?
That dictated what I listened to, what I bought on records. You know, that was my window into it. So,
and I still, and I still think they still do that radio, especially the Radio 1 guys like Sarah, Danny, Pete, and kind of all the peripheries. Like, they're all still doing that and pushing forward. However, that used to be the staple for everyone to do, is go and listen to radio when they're getting ready. Now it's not. Now it's, let's put on Deezer, let's put on Amazon Music, let's put on Spotify, let's put on Apple Music, because it's easy. So it kind of takes away the radio element. And when these tech platforms aren't actually curating multi-genre dance music playlists, I feel like that's where it stops, kind of people finding new stuff.
You have to dig a lot deeper to find it, definitely.
So when was it for you where you were like, okay, I have to start making music?
It was those sort of mid-2000s, really. That's where the model was changing. So we're in that sort of physical to digital shift, in that grey area where, you know, Beatport came through. You know, I'd gone from playing vinyl every week to, at that point, CD. And there was a big shift, and within that shift, it felt like to keep moving, you had to produce music.
Yeah.
It was naturally an evolution anyway, because, as you know, you get curious about, oh, I want to make a record like this, or I want to do a bootleg of that, or whatever, for your sets. So it kind of happened organically anyway, but it was definitely hit a conscious point where I was like, I've got to drive this forward. I've almost got to focus on that more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so it was probably mid to late 2000s, really. I think the real changing moment for me on that was when I played a couple of times with Express 2 at a festival in Scotland. And I just asked them, as you do, you know, as politely as possible, like, is there any way I could have a go at remixing something on spec? Bear in mind, you know, these guys are like one of my heroes. you just cheekily asked, and they gave me some stems to a track called Opulence, which was on Skint. And I did the remix, and that changed, as a producer, that changed the game for me, because that got me my relationship with Skint, which gave me, you know, a really great few years as an artist for them. Mm-hmm. And it's purely just down again to just someone giving you the chance at something, I guess.
Yeah. And asking.
Yeah, I guess. Not an easy question to ask, is it? But
no, it's really not. But I think back then as well, there was less people doing it. So less people would ask, less people were interested. It wasn't kind of like a cool, it wasn't cool then. It was more of a geeky thing to do, to be part of. Skin, that was like the big days of Skin.
Well, it was sort of, I think they'd had a little lull through that digital change. Mm. You know, obviously Skin, and it still is, it's got such a legacy and history, and, you know, still some of my favourite records ever have been released on Skin. It's such a great label. But I think through that transition from physical to digital, it's taken a little bit of a dip, and, you know, some other labels have sort of come up through, perhaps. And it's kind of having like almost a second wind that I was part of that, I guess. I was lucky to be part of that. But you know, all of that aside, for me, that was one of my favourite labels, still is one of my favourite labels. So even just to have a remix listened to, let alone released, was mind-blowing and amazing.
Was that Fatboy Slim's label, or was he signed to it?
He was signed to it as an artist.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're all very close friends, you know, I think they kind of cross-pollinated across Southern Fried, Skin, Loaded, etc. But Skin originally, I believe, was the sub-label of Loaded, which was the more, at that point, slightly more commercial arm.
Yeah.
And then Skin was the sort of, I think they kind of just created it, really.
Yeah. As that. Is it still around now? It's still doing stuff, isn't it?
It's part of BMG now.
Yeah.
So after Eat, Sleep, Rave, Repeat.
That one. Did you remix that?
I didn't remix it, no. I was lucky to be on the tour. Yeah. So that's... I mean, I did remix it, but, like, you know, you've done a couple of remixes.
Not officially.
It was officially allowed, but, yeah, you know. It's just something I played out. It never came out.
Yeah. That record was huge.
I still remember hearing it the first time. Obviously, I guess largely a lot of people, you know, will probably know the Calvin Harris version that you know, sort of went on to. But the original, that I thought it was absolutely amazing. Fucking genius.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I remember hearing it and going, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely genius. Is it real? Is it not? What, you know, because when you listen to the story, it does sound like, I know it's Beardy Man, but it does sound like someone just telling you a random story at NAFTA's. So genius move.
It was amazing.
But yeah, BMG, I believe, acquired Skin just after that record.
Oh, that was quite a while ago then.
2013-14.
So when in the process did you start, were you like, okay, I want to start my own record label?
I wanted to do it kind of from the off for quite a few years. Wartone maybe was 3 years in my head before it actually became a label.
Yeah.
So that started in 2009, and I pressed pause on it end of 2019, so I had 10 years.
Was it that long?
10 years. And made a lot of really good friends for at the time, a lot of great memories attached to some of those releases and some of those moments. And, it's very positive memories for me.
I think that's the thing is, why, I guess it's like, what was the reasoning of you starting the record label?
It genuinely was. I was just getting sent so many records I really liked. Mm. And I was like, why isn't anyone else putting these out? I really like this record. So that kind of really pushed me into thinking about it properly.
Yeah.
And then naturally alongside that, you know, I was getting more confident as a producer. In hindsight, you know, I've definitely changed a lot of those records. But at that time, you know, it's sort of, well, I'd like to release music when I want.
Yeah.
On my own sort of platform alongside all these great records that, you know, some of those people obviously are now really good friends, you know, these guys are sending me and that's, it just felt very organic.
Love that. Yeah. It was definitely like a little crew, wasn't it?
Mm.
I remember because I met Ben through you guys, which is his digital impression. Was he going out under us now?
So he's monoed now, which is new artist alias, but yeah, it was Digital Impression for that era, and still, hands down to this day, is one of the best producers I've ever met.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Amazing.
He's amazing.
We'll get onto it at a later point, maybe, but he's going to do a new EP for my new label. I'm starting a new label this year.
So. Sick. What's this new label?
It's called Strength in Numbers.
Nice.
I just wanted to leave Wartone in a good place, if that made sense, and just start something different. And it's going to be less frequent, more artist focused, not label branded focused in any way.
I want to talk about, sorry to butt in, but I want to talk about that leaving Wartone and starting something new. Over the years, there's so many labels that just keep hanging on. And there's so many artists that keep hanging on. We all can keep hanging on, right? Because it's not easy to do,
but it's, I guess it's more comfortable to stick with something,
it's the comfort zone, right? So I know we're getting to what you're doing now in a bit, but what was the reasoning of stopping Wartone and starting something new? Because I think a lot of people can learn from that. Sometimes a fresh start is actually exactly what is needed.
Well, I guess, you know, we can both relate to this as artists at some point. We probably many times over have considered starting a new alias, starting a new name.
I have an alias.
Yeah.
But that was because it was like me and somebody else. But I've never actually thought about changing my name.
I have a few times.
Yeah.
But then I've had many moments in the career where you're like, I'm done. You know, this is that. But yeah, back to the point, I guess, about the label. We celebrated 10 years and I was obviously transitioning into arts management, which, like I said, we can maybe get on into a bit, but it just felt the right time to just leave it in a good place. I didn't want to be, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 years in going, I should have just drawn a line under it in a good place. Like we did 10 years, we did an album, I did 10 shows with lots of friends to celebrate 10 years. And it just felt a really, I know it sounds real cliche, it just felt a good place to just press pause.
End it,
And just leave it as a good period of time, I guess, that can reflect on maybe, or, you know, or just leave it where it is, really. I just didn't want to destroy it.
I also think, tell me if you agree with this, but I think when you first start something, you learn so much throughout it. And I think there's a lot of things where, like, it's that, starting afresh, you can take all of the lessons you've learned and kind of put that all into something new, and you don't go through those teething problems whilst in the new project, which makes a lot of people don't see the teething problems from the outside, but you do, and those teething problems will always be there in the back of your mind going, oh, I wish I didn't do that, or I wish I did this, I wish I did that. Whereas when you start something fresh, it's very much like, okay, I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah, ground zero can be up here rather than down there with a lift.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I think, that's why I enjoy management, because I've learned all those things as an artist, maybe the hard way or doing things the wrong way, that can kind of hopefully help people.
Yeah.
Better decisions for their career, really.
Totally. Because have you stopped DJing and producing completely?
I've still got shows.
Yeah.
I'm just not chasing it in any way. Yeah. They're there. So the only shows I've got really are ones I want to do for enjoyment. So it sounds mad, and it took a long time to get that closure of being, no, it's time to move on. But like every time I play now, it genuinely feels like it did before it was a job. Like it's just fun.
Yeah.
I'm doing it purely for enjoyment. If I get paid as well, brilliant. If I don't, it's not about that. Do I want to do that show? Do I want to be around these people for that party? There's a couple of gigs I did in the last year I kind of did just to sort of say thank you to people that had supported me and given me shows all the years, you know, so I did them very low fee or whatever. Yeah. They'd been shut down for 2 years, you know, and they're amazing because there's just no pressure. I didn't have to post about it online. I haven't got no pressure of saying I'm doing all these shows or I'm not doing all these shows. I was just like, we can just go and play a party. It's really fun and there's no
expectations.
So I still do shows. I've stopped producing massively. I've just done a couple of bits over the last couple of years, purely again for enjoyment really. But I'm not, you know, I don't feel that I need to get in the studio every day.
It's funny that, isn't it, because you started off as a DJ.
and
I think that's the thing, is that production was kind of something that you had to do. It got to a point where you had to do it and you clearly enjoyed it, but
yeah, I did have to do it, but it did become, I did very much enjoy it. And it did, I'd say the second half of my career as an artist, I'm saying that loosely because I still can't always take that word seriously sometimes, but you know, the second half of that was down to production. It was down to the records releasing and the labels I was on, and without that probably would have been very different. But but I did enjoy that side of it. I really enjoyed making records. I really enjoyed getting to work with some of, you know, people I looked up to for years. So I didn't feel I had to do it. It just became what I did do. But obviously now I'm just not focused on that. I want all that energy to go into the artists I'm working with. And I never wanted to be, I've always been into the sort of the behind the scenes side of things as well as being the artist, but I never wanted to be a manager that still wants to be the artist. And you know, like, I don't know, a show comes in or a remix comes in and I'm like, well, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't, like, that should always be your artist first. Like that's for them now. It's their time. So I wanted to make sure I had full closure on leaving all that in a good place.
Yeah.
And then stepping forwards and, you know, all of those conversations, any shows I'm doing, they're all about those guys. I'm not, you know, I enjoy life in the shadows now. It took me all these years to realise I didn't like being in the spotlight. And you know, I know we're sat here talking now. I genuinely have been putting off doing anything like this for a long time. I don't want to be centre stage anymore.
What was that process beforehand? Because like, when was it where you were like, I love being in the music industry, I love doing what I'm doing, but something needs to change? And I feel like we all have certain things in our careers, in our lives that happen, and realizations that okay, I need to make a change somewhere to make me kind of progress on, or for something, for longevity or whatever it is in your head. I've had it many of times in my career. And what was it for you where you're like, okay, I think it's time to stop the artist side of it and take my skills and tools that I've learned into looking after artists and being an artist manager?
It's something I'd thought about for the last few years of being the artist. You know, I was still touring, I was still playing shows every week. I can still remember to this day the moment I was playing where, I don't want to name the club because I've played there since and I've thoroughly enjoyed playing there since many times, but you know, I was playing 3 a.m. to a room full of people. Like, it's a great club, it's a great show, and I genuinely just had that mad moment where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? which is, it's not something you'd ever expect to happen at any point, because, you know, it's a hobby that becomes an obsession, that becomes your life, that, you know, you live and breathe dance music. And I never at any point in those early years thought I'd ever be at a point where I'm like, what am I doing doing this? Because that's everything you've ever dreamed of. But I do remember that. And that was, I think, the catalyst to it. And that was in 2015. And I still had a couple of years of touring heavily as an artist and releasing and stuff. But it came, I think it came to a natural point where I was going to be a dad.
Yeah.
And that naturally makes you reassess things. And also, interestingly, you know, it's how small the world is. Conversation came about where our good friends OC and Verd were looking to explore different opportunities. I've got to be careful here with how that's worded, and you'll know why.
I so wish you dead named them.
I can't, because and asked if there's anyone I recommended them speaking to. So I hooked them up with Owen at Your Army Management, just for advice, really, I guess. And during that conversation, Owen said, because he's been one of my best friends for many, many years as well, great manager. He was like, have you thought about doing IS management? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's something I'd like to do one day. And I think that was that sort of penny drop moment. Where I was like, well, one day is probably now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and maybe this feels like the right moment. So that was probably the turning point, really. But then, you know, I was also about to become a dad, and I didn't know what was in store there either. So so that first probably 18 months of being an artist manager, I didn't have the time that I thought of, the time that I guess I'd not taken for granted, but been used to having, or the freedom I'd been used to having, because I became a dad and we had twins, with no real family support. So I couldn't go fully into it. Like everything I've always done has always been kind of all or nothing, you know? Yeah. And so I was learning a lot at the time on the job, I guess, which meant I wasn't able to do the best during that time. In hindsight, I took on too much at that moment, I think. But that was the turning point. That's where I was like, right, this feels like a logical time to just make a change. And that was a catalyst to it.
And here you are. It's really interesting how, because I see it a lot, and I'm sure you see it a lot as well, where you have a lot of our friends where kids kind of play a huge part in like the pivotal moment of of head down. I've got to look after these little beings, and they rely on you solely.
They do. And they don't, like, and I left it quite late in life as well. And so I kind of felt, I've kind of got to do what I want every day for all these years. You know, it's time to change that focus and put all the energy into them. And that's, you know, they don't know what a Zoom call is when you've got to go and do a Zoom call, or you've got to deal with this. Like, you know, and it puts a lot of things into perspective. And I'd never realized, I guess just blind ignorance, I'd never realized what that entailed, because I'd never really been around it. But it's incredible, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And that is, you know, that alongside being a manager now, that's my days. And I look after them full time. My partner works. And she went back to work very early on. So
That's awesome.
You know, I'm a full time dad as well as a full time manager. So I'll have to work. Like, I'll do some stuff in the mornings, and then a lot of my work gets done. Like, I'll work every night till 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Be able to do both.
I love that. My manager's the same. He got a little one during COVID. And it's pretty much the same. Just like, his wife goes off and works. He's a modern day man now. Both of you are. Got to look after the little ones.
It's amazing though. It's, you know, I feel very lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is the amazing thing about modern day work, right? Is that a lot of what, and this isn't everybody, we're extremely fortunate, but like, our work's not that time sensitive, if you know what I mean. It's not and it's a very flexible industry, but also a lot of industries are like that now, where it's like, okay, actually the work life, I don't like saying work life balance, because I don't necessarily, in our world, I don't think there is that really. I think it's you work as much as you want to work, and if you don't want to work, then you don't work. You might not necessarily achieve what everything, but that's still a choice. But I think for me, it's we're just super fortunate nowadays with the internet, and kind of, I think COVID helped massively with that, where it kind of like brought people back and was like, no, we don't actually need to do that.
That's the interesting thing is, so I remember doing, you know, doing this prior to COVID, and I'd almost have to not hide, but like kind of keep it on the lowdown that I'm at home on like a big conference call or something, you know, with agents and artists and promoters or whatever, you know, because they're all in their offices, et cetera, et cetera. I'm at home. I've just changed two nappies, like, you know, but I'm still dealing with a big tour or whatever. And I'd have to try and mask that a little bit on my call. Whereas COVID's, you know, and the pandemic kicking in meant everyone was at home.
Yeah.
And everyone had their kids in the background or whatever. So it kind of just made everything more acceptable in that respect, which in hindsight, it's like, as long as you're doing a good job and you're getting done what you need to do, like, it shouldn't matter where you are in the world. Or I don't need to be in a office in some posh street in London. Like, I can do just as good a, if not better job than someone, as long as I put the work in anyway. So it doesn't matter. So yeah, it was interesting in that respect, I think.
No, I agree. When you start looking to sign artists, especially your like first artists for you, when, like, what's that process?
It's a funny one, because having been the artist,
yeah,
I see a lot of things where you're like, oh, now I understand why I've never stood a chance in this position, or that happening, or because I see it very differently now. There's no definitive answer, really. Like, all the artists I work with, I know it's a small roster, but they're all very different.
Yeah.
Deliberately different, I guess, from my side. I don't want a roster of
the same
people fighting for the same thing, because I don't think it's ever fair. I kind of feel like everyone needs their own space, and it's their vision. Mm. And, you know, I'm, or the management team or whoever's working with them, is there to try and bring that to life for them. Like, it's, you know, it's their life, it's their career, it's their goals, and we're there to try and help it happen. I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but so but with that being said, I don't think it's a definitive you need to do X, Y, and Z for, you know, there's different things in different people that's excited me. And there's artists, you know, I've had conversations with her, and I'm like, I think they're great, but can I do what they need to do? I don't know. And I wouldn't be fair for me to sign someone kind of knowing that, maybe. I'd rather see him go off and get the right team and do what they want to do, because that's important. And again, I think, I don't know if that comes from being the artist, from like, you're fucking with people's lives. Like, you've got to do your job, or step away and let someone else do it.
Did you ever have a manager?
Yeah, I did at a couple of points. I had one during the Skint era, and he was the A&R at Skint at that time. It didn't start out like that, but it just naturally developed, that relationship developed. And he was great. Rich was great.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah, a lot of stuff though was self-done prior to that and around that. And as you know, I'm quite headstrong. So,
well, yeah, I never remembered you I never knew you to have a manager, because you were always the one just like out there doing it yourself and kind of pushing forward.
Yeah.
How important do you think that is as an artist to kind of do that? Because I think nowadays it's very easy to be like, producer a couple of records, start DJing, and I need a manager. But I don't personally, I don't think that's the way forward. I think an artist needs to get to a certain level to the point where they can't handle what they're dealing with and what's coming in.
I agree with that. I think I guess it depends what they want or what people want as an artist, and it's a different, slightly different model maybe for different lanes. But if you're creating momentum already yourself, I think you're in a stronger position.
Yeah.
Because you're just building a team then around you to keep growing that momentum and driving that forward, rather than going, I've got this big record. And then the manager comes on board and you're solely reliant on
one record.
That, which might, and it might be quite linear as well. You know, it could be quite restrictive, because if for whatever reason it didn't work out and you're spat out the other side,
yeah,
where'd you go with that? If that record's gone and everything done day to day was part of perhaps whatever that machine was that, you know, you signed up to, and then you're like, well, I don't even know how to start this again. I don't know. But I'm not saying that doesn't work. It does, you know, see for some artists that does really work. I do think we're in a good time though, where everyone's kind of largely got the same tools. You can, I mean, things like Instagram, LinkedIn, you can get in touch with anyone you want to. It's very easy. You've got the phone book. We didn't have that 20 years ago.
We had the DJ Mag Black Book. Can you remember that?
But that's what I mean. Like, even prior to that, I didn't. So when I got on break, Facebook, MySpace, none of that existed.
No.
Like, you couldn't get in touch with anyone unless you physically saw them.
Yeah.
Or you posted them, a mixtape or CD or whatever. So, like, we're in a beautiful era where everyone can do it, but also, if you're smart and you're very proactive, like, everything's there on the table.
It's super easy to contact people now. It's not an easy industry to get involved, and I'd say it's probably harder now than it ever has been to a certain extent, because there's so many people, because being a producer DJ is actually something people can look up to be a career. I think that takes the magic out of it, if I'm honest. I think for so many, like, how many years are you an artist before you start earning money? And I've speak to many people on a regular occurrence where it's like, okay, I need to write a record and then I need to start earning money. And I'm like, doesn't work like that. No. It's going to take a very long time till you can give up your day job.
Yeah.
It might not. You might be lucky and you might be like on your way to stardom very quickly, but I think for me, it took 10 years before I was like full time into music.
I think it's good though that I went straight into it. Like when I got that, which after a summer in Ibiza, you know, that's not a cheap summer.
Well, I say full time, like, I mean, a touring artist. Before that, I was doing the same residencies in Ibiza and kind of earning my money through music, but I wouldn't say I was like...
I think it's important nowadays, if people have got a revenue stream and that's a day job, whatever that is, you know, it could be a glamorous one, it could be a rubbish one, whatever it is, like, that day job doesn't consume all your creative time in your head. So all it does is it facilitates you, in theory. It depends what the job is. But, you know, it affords you maybe the safety of, right, I can pay my bills, so I can focus every night, every morning, whenever that time is, on making this music and doing it right, rather than having to make the wrong decisions where you're like, I need to pay my rent this month. I've got to do this gig. It's absolutely the wrong gig to do. It's a shit gig, but they're paying me a few hundred quid and I need that to pay my rent.
Yeah.
If you've got, it is a luxury. If you've got the luxury of a day job,
totally,
to take that pressure off financially, you can make smarter decisions and you can invest that money into growing the business, essentially, of an artist properly. Invest into it as you would invest into yourself.
I was listening to a Rick Rubin interview yesterday, Lex Friedman and Rick Rubin.
I've not checked that one.
I'll send it to you. It's really good. It's not as good as I thought it would have been, because Lex just spoke way too much and I just would have preferred to hear Rick Rubin talk. But towards the end of it, Rick, on it's not, I'm not directly quoting, but he was like, do anything you can, do anything you need to do to create.
Mm-hmm.
And if the creating makes you happy, go get a day job so that you can carry on creating. And he was like, you may not ever make your career as music, as your art or something like that. However, if you stop creating, you'll be unhappy. And yeah. And I think that's the thing, is it's so easy nowadays to be like, oh, I need to make this into a job. But I think a lot, and even I can forget it, is it's like, I'm doing this because I love it. And when that love stops, and when that love kind of gets too much pressure, because you're like, I have to do this, I have to make a hit record, blah, 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 all of those things that we all say to ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hang on a minute. I don't have to put this much pressure on the art that I'm creating, because I can just go get another job if you wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think that pressure is needed to a certain extent. We need to put pressure on if we want to grow and we want to be bigger artists and we want to be better producers and better DJs. But I think there comes a point where it's like, especially if you're setting out, it's like, if you just like making music, you don't have to make a career out of it. You can just enjoy making music. Well, we know somebody that we were talking about earlier in the podcast. Like,
I was just saying, Ben's
a great example. Killer example. He's one of the best producers out there, still has a day job, and I don't think he has any interest in being an artist.
Not like to the levels that you're talking about. Yeah, right. You know, he just enjoys the process of making great music.
Yeah.
And it comes organically, and I don't feel there's a pressure for that, you know, that to have to scale. If it does, brilliant, but it's not, that's not the agenda. It's like, it just makes a record for the sake of making a record, and they're fucking brilliant.
They're great.
I guess that's the reason for it.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. Let's talk about the artists you manage, and kind of, I want to kind of pick out their careers and kind of go into some detail.
Well, yeah, it's a small circle of friends, essentially, though, isn't it?
I know, it's mad. Let's start with Gene.
Mm-hmm. The legend,
Gene. How did you guys start working together?
So with Gene, so I was...
Gene Farris, by the way.
Gene Farris, Chicago's very own. So with Gene, so I was at Your Army Management with Owen, like I said, for, I think, almost 2 years.
Mm.
And actually, randomly, all goes full circle. So Wartone Records, we were doing that 10 years of Wartone tours, did 10 shows. And the very last thing I did was a live stream from label at its office, which was purely because they've distributed the label for majority of that time. So it just felt like a good sort of last thing to do at the end of the tour. So that was December 2019. Obviously none of us knew what was coming. And Label Works have a management department called Reset at Night, which is where I am right now. And so that conversation naturally came where they're like, we're looking after, they were managing Gene and Ollie Gorp at that time. And they were like, we really want to try and grow this next year and scale it and stuff. Is it something you'd be interested in exploring? So that conversation came about just really because I was at the office anyway doing the live stream. So we explored that further and that felt like a natural thing to explore more. And then the start of 2020, I moved over to Reset the Night to head that up. And so by default, it meant I started managing Gene.
Yeah.
And obviously at a very pivotal point in time, because literally 1 month into the job, the world ended.
Yeah.
You know, we were all going to go to Miami. I'm sure you can remember that. Yeah, I don't know. In fact, you just done your huge tour.
Yeah, which I was lucky.
Fucking amazing to see. But yeah, you know, we're literally like, Miami, brilliant, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, the world's shutting down. Are we still going to Miami? What's going on?
Yeah.
And that's where I started working with Gene. So the irony is I'd literally met him once because he'd been over in, I think, February to do a show in London.
Yeah.
I hadn't even seen the show because I had to, I can't remember. I was at someone else's show. But I met up with him the day before or the day after just to say hello.
Yeah.
And then I'd never seen him play. Then the pandemic kicked in. And the first time I saw Gene play in real life was February this year.
Was it really?
Yeah. So 2 years, 2 years deep until I actually saw him DJ. And obviously I'd been working with him on a daily basis for 2 years. Obviously I've seen many a live stream because he had the weekly show on Dirty Bird, but yeah. So that's how it started. A bit of a long answer, but yeah, kind of, I guess by default, I kind of took over the reins really. And feel really lucky to. I've got some Gene Ferris records there.
Yeah, like, it's mad, that, isn't it?
You know, I didn't. You know, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have thought I'd be lucky enough to work with him.
It's mad how long he's been doing it, and things are really growing again for him. And it's interesting how careers go, have like ebbs and flows, right? And how
Gene's in a really good place at the moment.
Yeah.
Things are flying as well, and it's exciting. It's really in a positive place and very motivated, and the music that's coming this year is exciting. There's a new album he's working on for next year.
That's
genuinely excited about that one. It's like feels in a really good place.
Yeah.
And as you know, it's just good energy to be around. He's a great guy, you know, heart of gold, and still 30 years deep, passionate about what he does.
He's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's mad that it's crazy. Cause it's like when I put it into perspective, like when you're around like the older guys in the industry, especially like Green Velvet, and you're just like, this dude had a hit record like when I was born. even MK, like Burning came out in 1991. I was 1 year old, and you're just like, okay. When I put it in perspective like that, it's like, okay, I'm doing good. There's still time. There's still, and then it's very easy to lose that because you see like the new like the younger kids coming through, and you're like, fuck, they're literally like chomping at my tails, like. But
also, that was all us at one point.
Exactly, we were. And we technically still are to the older guys, if you know what I mean. But I think it's that perspective is that I think when you realise that there's still time and there's actually space for everybody.
There is. That's the biggest thing. You know, going back to the label name, strength in numbers.
Yeah.
Like, work together, we can win together. Yeah. Like, you don't need to fight.
No.
I know it sounds real blue sky thinking, but I genuinely think there is room for everyone. Like, it's a big scene.
Yeah, it's huge, and more people are getting into it. And I think this is the thing is like, yes, you might not be the headliner at every festival or every show, but you're playing shows and you're still touring and people still turning up to see you. Like, it goes to show. If people aren't turning up to see you, then yeah, maybe get worried. Like, maybe that's the time to be like, okay, I need to look at myself in the mirror and work out what I really want to do. But if people are turning up to shows, even if it's 100 people, even if it's 50 people, people are still turning up. You can grow from that. And I think as long as you are willing to grow from it, that's, and not have expectations that you are, take your ego out of it and go, okay, I need, how do I grow from this? And how do I build? Then
the reality is, you know, like, even if it's one person or 10 people showing up, mm-hmm. that's still 10 more people than there is at your bedroom wall when you're DJing to that.
Exactly.
And you start.
Yeah.
So that's progress. Like, 10 can become 20, can become 30. That's, we all start at zero, every single one of us. So I think totally, like, if there's something there, you just got to learn how to grow it or adapt or find where that sweet spot is.
Totally. Totally. So, moving on from Gene, you got Jess now, Jess Bays.
Jess Bays.
So this is, I can't remember how I met Jess. I think I met Jess through Sam Devine.
Probably
through
Sam, I'd imagine.
Before she was DJing, I think.
She was Sam's TM.
Yeah. And then I kind of started to pay attention to what she was up to during lockdown. And she's kind of, it felt like during lockdown with what you guys have done with her as well and what she's done, it's kind of, it felt like that she was one of the artists that kind of came through lockdown and came out swinging, all guns blazing, and is now a successful DJ producer out of lockdown.
How it's felt for us. So Jess was the first artist assigned when we were at Reset. So when I started at Reset again, I think it literally was the first week of March we started working together.
Yeah.
2020. And obviously at that point, you know, Jess had got some dates in the diary as a DJ.
Yeah.
I think she'd done one remix on Sam's label Divine, and that was about it music wise. She had some records sort of that she worked on and stuff. But that was the starting point. I think she had like 2,000 monthly Spotify listeners. Mm. We're now on 1.3 million, like 2 years down the line. So there's been a real exciting growth, and that's been down largely to Jess being Jess. You know, she's an amazing personality. She walks into the room, she lights up the room. You know, she's naturally that star. Mm. She's got a lot of characteristics that many artists, you know, strive to have but can never have because it's just authentically there.
Mm.
So it's been really exciting to kind of see that really come to life and the music lead the way with that. You know, she deliberately kind of created her own lane. Like, you know, there's a lot more of that music around now, but at the start of lockdown, no one was really making that kind of deep house vibe that Jess was doing.
Yeah.
And I paired her up again. This is how small the world is. I paired her up with Richie, Dirty Secrets. Another good friend of both ours from, you know,
years ago.
Yeah, from years ago.
From the Wartone days.
Yeah, exactly.
Wartone days, yeah.
And that partnership in the studio is kind of magic. That's what's really brought her vision to life. And as you know, Richie's an amazing producer in his own right, but he's not made any of those records because you can hear his sound in it, but they're not his sort of sound specifically as an artist. That's Jess's vision.
Totally.
You know, combined with, I guess, his technical sort of skills to create those records.
So, I think that's what a lot of people kind of struggle to wrap their head around is that a producer is technically somebody that sits in the room and kind of guides the engineer to do things and kind of brings
that's the original. We've seen, I guess, the modern day version where a producer's kind of expected to do everything
in electronic music. Like, that's never like listening, like, again, going back to Rick Rubin, like he was just saying he just fucking lies there. He just lies there. He has an engineer doing the engineering and then
indirects
and sometimes doesn't even do anything, like not even saying anything, not even kind of giving any feedback, just there. And that's the interesting thing is that in the dance music, we have this like huge thing that you have to do this and you have to write all your music and you have to do all your socials, you have to do all that. And it's like, fucking hell, guys, like, we're not fucking superhumans.
But also, again, like, kind of touching on what I said before, do you like the record? Does it make you dance? Wicked. That's largely all that matters. And if you don't, that's cool. So it doesn't, you know, you'll like something else. It doesn't, like, it's the end product and how that fits into anyone's life when they consume it or digest it or listen to it. I don't think it really matters how you get to that point.
I'm in the process of starting a project in the moment, and I'm writing. I did like my first few writing sessions last week, and had like different writers in the sessions with me. And I think for spending so many years in a studio by myself, doing everything myself, and then sitting in a room where I'm just at the back kind of going, yeah, let's do this, let's do that. It's weird because over the last, like, maybe, I don't know, I guess I've always written for other people over the years. And I've done like pop sessions with other engineers and other producers, and kind of just been in the back of the room going, yeah, maybe this, maybe that, not really at the controls. So I'm kind of used to that. But then when it's to do with my own project, it's like very weird. But it's also it's also quite like refreshing, where I know the process is what we're doing is we're writing a load of records and then I'm going to go and produce them or engineer them, I guess. I don't know. But so it's just like very, it's quite, it is very nice to be able to just sit back and go, actually, no, I don't like that. We should do something new. Let's start something else. Yeah, it's fun. I like it. I really like it. But I also like the concept of an artist having a producer or an engineer, and it's almost like a team thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an obvious example. Look at Elton John.
Yeah,
that's a partnership, start to finish, and that's what makes those records so great.
Yeah. 100%, 100%.
And one without the other doesn't necessarily create the same thing. So.
No, it really doesn't. And it, going back to Jess, she's doing some amazing stuff, and her records are doing really well. And it's
exciting because they're not necessarily obvious records. Like you know, they're accessible, but they're credible.
Yeah.
And they're just naturally picking up steam. Yeah. Like, you know, it's not a hard sell in any way. They're just the right records at the right time.
Yeah.
With the right person. It's a really exciting time for Jess, and this year's, mate, a diary this year is mad.
Yeah.
In a great way. And just genuinely fucking excited for her. Cause it's just, you know, she's worked super hard.
Yeah, she does. She does work really hard, and she always has. It's just keep growing from that, and I know she will, 100%.
It's going to be a mad summer for her. So.
Yeah, that's good. And you just signed Charlie T, who's like one of my best mates.
Yeah, Charlie's fucking amazing too. I'm really excited about working with all of them.
Yeah.
Charlie spoke to Charlie over a year ago about it. She just finished at Kiss at that point. But with lockdown, everything the way it was, I didn't have the confidence that I had the capacity to do what she needed at that time.
Yeah.
And I had the first call with Charlie was about an hour and a half long, just instantly had a lot of similar interests and, you know, spoke about all sorts of stuff and put the worlds to rights, you know, and I just knew on that call, I was like, she's amazing. And I'd love to work with her.
She's the best.
And I had to really think hard about the reality of, like I touched on at the beginning, you know, when I started management, maybe I didn't know what was coming and in hindsight, maybe should have done that, or at least made sure I had the time to do what I needed to do during that time. So with Charlie, I didn't want to start that and not be able to deliver what she needed. Yeah. You know, Jess was really flying, and there was so much going on at that time. Jean was really flying. Had Janssen's at that time as well, and there was a lot going on. Like, and I was definitely close to capacity with it as a manager. And I never wanted to be one of those managers that's got 10 artists, and you just kind of.
It's not good.
Whoever shouts the loudest gets the most attention. Like, it shouldn't ever be like that. No. I'm like, all or nothing. Like, I'm going to be able to do everything you need to the best of my ability. Or not. Like, and if it's not, you should be with someone else. So with Charlie, I didn't want to take that on and not be able to do any of that. So at that point, I just couldn't work with her at the time, sadly. And then it was through a mutual friend at Clash. I'd hooked her up with Clash to do this thing that's just recently been released, where she did just a little showcase on a Pioneer thing with Clash magazine. And
looked wicked, that. They filmed that amazingly.
Yes, that's my friend. That's my friend Gary that's done that. And was just chatting with Gary. I was like, so who's looking after Charlie now? I just presumed like she was working with someone already by that point, because she's so exciting as an artist.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think anyone. So I just reached out to Charlie and we had the conversation again. And, you know, this was prior to obviously the Radio 1 announcements and stuff coming. You know, know that was coming. It just felt a good time to sort of re-explore that and then naturally start working together again. And then, you know, now she's in an amazing position, rightfully so. You know, she's going to have a weekly show on Radio 1 on a Saturday night as well, which has been...
It's mental, that.
It's been a minute since Radio 1's had a dance show on a Saturday night. Yeah. Starting in September. So, again, amazing artist that I genuinely feel lucky to be working with.
Yeah, I'm so happy for her. I've known Charlie for years. I don't think we ever have worked out when we actually met, but I think it was like, it was definitely a long time ago.
Was it Ibiza or?
I don't know. I think it was Ibiza.
Yeah.
So yeah, easy 10 years ago. But I've seen her again. She's chosen a route that's not your average route to be.
Not an easy route.
Yeah. To be in the music industry. She's chosen the radio DJ route, and radio DJs are kind of grandfathered into their spots for God knows how many years. If you know what I mean, like look at Pete, like how long Pete's been on Radio 1. And I know the guy that actually signed Pete to Radio London before it was Radio 1.
Was he on one of your
Tom. Before, yeah.
Great episode that was.
And that was years ago. Look at Annie Nightingale.
Yeah.
Like still going. And Charlie kind of was she at Capital at one point? Or did she always do Kiss?
She was at Kiss for I think 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, and
she did D&B TV as well as a presenter, and you know she's put in the graft and she's got the talent, and she stuck to her guns, which is very easy to be like, I've got to be a producer, I've got to do this route or that route, and she's very much stayed authentic to herself throughout. That's why. It's fucking great to see her in this position.
I remember when she called me when she found out that like Kiss was like no longer, and she was like, "I think I'm gonna get a real job."
Yeah,
and I'm just like, "Just hold out, please." Like it's because for years, me and Charlie have like had conversations like she should be at Radio 1, and I was like, "You will get Radio 1 one day." Like you're gonna get it, but you just have to keep going and keep doing what you're doing and like brainstorm and just run a load of ideas and she's a classic example that it's not been one linear route to career success, and how that it means that sometimes you just have to just keep pushing on and keep going and keep going and keep that goal and that dream kind of at the top and just keep pushing it until you get there. And I know that this Radio 1 thing is like a huge thing for her, but I also know that this isn't the end goal for her. And
this feels like the beginning.
Exactly.
Of the next chapter. Yeah. Like genuinely does. You know, I don't want to give too much away, but like both kind of know where Charlie wants to go and she's got a skill set to do it and deliver, and this feels like that catalyst to that next part.
The thing I really like about Charlie is that obviously she's a great person, but the knowledge she has in music is
you can't buy that.
It's very special, and over the years what she's done on radio just generally in Kiss, and this is no disrespect to Kiss, but in the UK, like Kiss is a big radio station, but Radio 1 just kind of rules over everybody. And you're never going to get that will never change. No matter how much money these commercial radio stations put in, the BBC is always going to kind of take over that. And I feel like sometimes when you're on a smaller radio station, it's kind of like looked down upon because you're not at the, at the top of the game. But you've also got to realize, like, no, she was a radio DJ on KISS for 8 years. Yeah. Like, that's impressive. And she did a lot of fucking shows on KISS.
She had the specialist dance show, but she also covered daytime stuff.
Exactly.
She did a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Strong skill set. And above all that, she's a fucking great DJ. Yeah. And there needs to be more fucking great DJs out there. No disrespect to a lot of, you know, there's some great DJs, but there's also some people that get to play amazing shows and they're pretty bang average. Like, Charlie's a really good DJ.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, she's going to be.
We were listening to some in Miami that were pretty bang average.
Yeah.
No problem. Oh dear. Yeah, she's wicked, mate. You've got a cool little crew. Is that just the three?
So it's those three, and there's another guy called Matthias. His artist name is Matteo. He's out of Chicago, brand new, developing apps. We've only had like two releases, self-released cool. at the moment.
What type of music is that?
He's on that sort of Bicep Dusky kind of vibe.
Sick.
So everyone's very different.
Yeah,
you know, Gene, Jess, Charlie, and Matthias.
What's it like with Matthias? Because I put what you're saying on that tip, it's very UK.
That's what's interesting me, because obviously he's in Chicago and that's where he's from, but he's heavily influenced by UK sound. And
yeah.
And I've always kind of liked a curveball on everything. Yeah. And it's like, well, that's different to a lot of what's going on in the States at the moment.
Yeah.
So let's see if we can use that as your strength, you know, because if he was over here, he'd be one of a lot of other guys doing a similar thing. Whereas he's over there doing it, there's a lot fewer people doing that. And as you know, it's a very big space, you know,
it's huge. Yeah.
There's a lot going on. So if we can craft that right, he's got the talent. He's fucking amazing. Like, if we craft that right and he's got the skill set to be a live act as well. It doesn't just have to, you know, be linear as a DJ. It can grow into a little solo live act. So
yeah,
it's exciting, and it's different.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want to sort of do obvious stuff. I want to kind of.
I think obvious stuff is easy, right? And
it is, but
it's not always.
I've always liked backing the underdogs.
Yeah, you always have. Well, so, I guess realistically, like you were the underdog.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? Like there's not many people that like work as hard as you have worked over the years and
never quite tipped, really.
It just takes, but what's tipping? This is the thing.
You know, I'm kind of dismissing, like.
You had a fucking insane career.
I feel really fucking lucky to have done any of the million things I've got to do. Like that's all dream stuff, and that's what helped me with the closure. But I think was that sort of reality is, like, I've still done all these things that I've always dreamed of doing. Yeah. There's only two things I've not ticked off. I won't name them because I still want to get them, but you know, even just playing in more than one city in the same night was like a dream. You know, it's like, it's mind-blowing, let alone flying to another country or producing a record with heroes, you know. I'm cool. Right.
I think that's the thing, is like, it's very easy for me anyway to be like, yeah, but I'm not Carl Cox yet, if you know what I mean. And it's very easy to kind of like, every time you achieve something, it's like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? But it's like, how is that as a manager? Because you're in a very different situation now to like, all these small wins are wins, and some of them are big wins. Like, how is that on the manager side of it compared to an artist? Because I can guarantee that a lot of the artists are like, okay, what's next?
Yeah, they are. But the mad thing is, they feel the same for me. Like, I'm not on stage, or I'm not getting that hit record with my name on, but it feels the same. Like,
that's what I mean.
We've worked together to get to that point. So it still feels like a win.
And I think that's the thing. What I'm trying to get at is, you're a little bit, although you're working with the artist on such a regular occurrence, and you're the manager, but you're not the artist. So you're kind of a little bit more detached, and you can kind of see it from an outside perspective a little bit more, and you can be like, no, this is fucking great. Whereas a lot, I can only speak for myself because I don't necessarily know what Jess, Jean and Charlie's kind of, and Mateus heads at, but like, my manager would be like, oh, there's, you've just done another million on this record. And I'm like, oh, fucking great. What's the new record doing? If you know what I mean? And like, but as the manager, that's a big win.
I think it's just that, I think it is just that detachment, which allows you that objectivity, which is what I always struggle with as the artist. Mm. And as you'll know, like, you're so in it and you're so focused on where you're going that you don't really sometimes, until you stop and look back, which there's never a minute to really do that as the artist.
Yeah.
To really necessarily always take in what's going on. Whereas when you're in the sort of sidelines, you're able to see it. Obviously, you're still looking at where you're going. And Jess will tell you, I'm forever saying, like, blinkers on, let's look at where we're going with this, like, eyes on the prize.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an example, Jess has had some phenomenal moments over the last 2 years, and a lot of those are things, you know, we could only dream of at the start. So it's just, I guess it's trying to find that second to absorb it.
Yeah,
for those guys. I mean, you know, what we're aiming at is amazing also, and it's all in our sights, and I think it's all achievable. Same with Gene, same with Charlie. I can't speak on their behalf, you know, of how it feels for them, but being on the sidelines, I can maybe take a second or two more to take it in than they can, because they're still driving forward.
Yeah. You know, when you're an artist and you're always getting your head, like, just, I don't know if that ever happened for you, but for me, it's like, even today, like, I was in the shower and just being like, fucking just going mental in my head just because of things.
Yeah.
Do you get that as a manager?
That more so, maybe.
Do you think?
It's the pressure mentally is mad. Yeah. Yeah, because it's, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it depends on maybe different managers do things differently. Mm. Maybe I do things wrong or right. I don't know, you know, what is right or wrong. Yeah. But yeah, the pressure is pretty intense because there's so many moving parts. Like, you might be putting together a tour at the same time as dealing with four releases at the same time, and dealing with what you're doing in Q4 or Q1 next year at the same time as putting out a fire of something that you did 4 months ago that for whatever reasons come back around, and you've got to undo something, but you're not, like, you've got to do it because it needs doing, but it doesn't help move anything forward. So it's kind of, you know, like, that's just maybe just, it's just a lot of balls in the air, I think. You. But I quite like it because I've always liked that pace anyway. I think I like it more so because I'm not in the spotlight as the artist, so I haven't got to still go on stage and perform the show, which, you know, I used to be doing all that stuff as well, and then still have to perform with a spotlight in your face for 2 hours and be on point. Whereas I can just be dealing with all that whilst they're doing the show. So like, it's good pressure. I like it.
Nice. How do you work with your artists when are all of your crew very hands-on, or are you very much so where you're like, okay, you guys just create, you go just do the creation?
They're all completely different.
Yeah.
Every single one's completely different. So there's no, it's not like, it's even like a template or a linear approach you can apply. Like, Gene's completely different to Jess, who's completely different to Charlie. I think it's maybe, you know, that's part of the trying to find the perfect dynamic from a manager's point of view with the artists, is it's their vision. And like I said before, you know, and you need the right team around you that can adapt to your workflow as an artist or how you want to work, and they can amplify that and empower that and help focus it or drive it in the right direction, rather than, you know, there's a lot of energy but it's spread across a few things. It's like, right, this is what we're trying to achieve, how do we connect those dots? It's not a straightforward answer because they're all completely different, and I have to work very differently in different ways with all of them, and obviously they're all on different time zones. Gene's 6 hours behind us, which ironically works well for me because, like I said, you know, I look after the girls every single day as well. So Gene's 6 hours behind. So he's, you know, his stuff I can deal with
later on,
largely in real time for him, but it's later on in the day here, you know. So, so that's why I'll be working till like 3 a.m.
Joyful. Gotta love
it. I enjoy it, actually. Yeah. I enjoy it.
Well, so, I guess you get a bit of your own time as well.
No, I definitely don't get any of that.
No, you know what I mean? Like, when you're working on that later on at night, it's like you're just focused on that one thing. You don't have to worry about anything else. Kids are in the bed and
they are, but twins being twins, they still wake each other up. So that, we've not had a night where they've slept through yet.
Have you not?
No.
Oh.
And they're up at 6:30. And bearing in mind, I'm going to bed at 3.
That's rough, mate. It's DJ life.
It's just like DJ life, but it never switches off.
Did you ever switch off, though, as a DJ?
No, I don't think I did.
No, I don't go on holidays. I don't switch off.
It's hard, isn't it? Because you're so
in it.
You're so driven in your head, and you're like, even when you're trying to switch off, you're like, oh, I just want to do this, or this would be a great idea. I'm, like you're saying, in the shower, and your head's going, oh, what about this? I'll do that. And not for a second have you actually stopped and gone, well, that feels nice. Always just like,
it's a head fuck. Really, because it gets to a point where you're like, why are we doing it?
Because we love it.
Yeah, but then it's like, if we love it so much, why don't we enjoy the moment? Because I think that's I never forget that first show I played. Never forget it. I was absolutely shitting my pants. Yeah. But afterwards, it was the best feeling ever.
I've always got nervous. I got nervous before this scene. I've always got nervous before having to do anything like that anyway. So that always reminds you, I think, you know, before you go on stage.
I don't really ever get nervous now. It's only like super big shows, like really big shows. I think the last time I was like nervous was the first show back last year.
Well, I guess, you're coming straight back into 3000s and a V10 after 2 years off.
3000s and a V10 and 5,000 people in front of you and you're like, oh, fuck.
And do these records sound like I think they do in a club? Well, not in a club. I guess it's a festival, right?
So, mate, I didn't look up.
Yeah.
Didn't look up for 30 minutes of my set. It was just like, I can't physically look at people without worrying that I'm going to press the wrong button.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is Pioneer sent me a V10 right before the pandemic, but it was in my house in Detroit. So I literally had opened the box, but hadn't done anything with it.
Shit.
Yeah, it's good times though, man. I don't want to hold you much longer, but I want to talk about Strength in Numbers. I really like the name a lot.
I do. It was one of those moments that I was searching for a name for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to do a new label, and I knew I wanted it to be not restricted. Like, it's whatever. If I like a record, I believe in the artist, that's all that matters. I don't mind what genre it is. But I need a name that represents what I want it to be. So that's it. And the logo is literally a free hand-drawn heart. That's it.
Amazing. Send it over to me when you can. What's the plans with that?
At the moment, it's a little bit open-ended because I'm just trying to decide what the records are that we release and the best way of giving those as much visibility and as much life as possible. You know, like, I don't want records to be dead in 4 weeks. Like,
oh, so, like, hard, mate.
You know, like, Jess's single at the moment, Temptation. I know we've kind of gone off back to a tangent really of that, but it's a great example. That came out in February.
Yeah.
We're still working that record and it is flying. It's still moving. And like, that's how can you bring more life to a record? How can you re-present that record to people that maybe didn't hear it first time around? Or
it's so hard.
And that's what I want to do with the label is find ways of just keep breathing life into great records that are going to sound great in 20 years. I know it sounds real cliche to be like, I want to kind of create timeless records. But again, maybe having run Auto for 10 years has given, you know, I've learned a lot of stuff of what does, doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, even maybe where I didn't do things right or wrong around records. And then being a manager, I've learned a lot of things around working campaigns, and hopefully I can put some of that skill set into these records that I just genuinely fucking love.
Yeah.
So Ben's going to do an EP for it. Again, he's got no real aspirations of being...
Monod.
Yeah. You know, he just wants to release great music. And that's amazing, because I've got then the challenge of, especially, I guess, with him, because he's not necessarily got an audience as such as an artist. How do I create visibility for a record with that dynamic?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting challenge.
It's so different. It's so strange nowadays. It's not strange at all. It's how it's always been. Mm. But I think because we're used to having some sort of success on each record, right? That when a new artist comes through and like, it may do like 100,000 streams, and to you that's like, or to us that's not much, if you know what I mean. It's not kind of game changing. However, to that artist, it's the biggest fucking thing they've ever achieved. And I think it's very easy for us to be like, no, we need to grow more. It goes back to that same thing as what we were saying just a minute ago. But it's like, you need to set achievable goals that are actually achievable for what you're doing, without being over confident. Because
you know, even 100,000 streams, I know, like saying, it's not necessarily life changing to a career level, you know, for an artist, but it's still 100,000 streams. Yeah. That's still a win. Even if it's 10,000, you know, if that's a win for them, I know it's, I don't want to sell anyone short, but like, if that's amazing for them, that's a win.
Yeah.
Let's try and build on that. I don't know. Yeah. I want it to be, safe place for artists that can make music however they want.
Yeah.
It's going to be quality over quantity. You know, I'm not going to put something out every week. I'm not necessarily even going to put something out every month in any way at all. It might just be
when you find something good,
5-6 records a year, maybe, maybe an album project. You know, there's a few things exploring. It's an artist called, it's from your neck of the woods, actually, Dark Arts Club. Got some amazing records. Mm. Charlie's released one of his records as well at some point. Just artists that are exciting, that are doing something for the right reasons, and they just believe in their music. It doesn't necessarily fit in a mold. So
I that's kind of the vibe with my label, to be fair. It's also signing friends that I love.
Yeah, and it's working with great people, right?
And kind of having a crew that don't sound all like each other, and that can, on a business side of it, because I'd be lying if I say that I don't look at it as a business, but how can I curate a night for a club with just my label and make it sound amazing?
And it's a good way of looking at it. I mean, I agree, you've got to look at it as a business. It's never been driven by that for me.
No.
But the reality of the blueprint is it needs to function in that way to scale.
It needs to at least pay for itself for a certain amount of time. Where,
well, I think it needs to scale so that you can continue to amplify their music.
Yeah,
exactly. You've got to create that platform for them, and that requires things to work in a certain way. But it's still, for me, especially with the label, you know, this is music driven and it's artist driven and it's art driven for me. I want it that to be paramount, and then hopefully 20 years of learning things the hard way, you know, I can help elevate those in the right way.
Sick, man. The socials and all of that out for that or not, is it?
Insta @ We Have Strength in Numbers.
Nice.
It's on Facebook as well, but obviously
fuck Facebook.
There's no posts on there, but the channel's out there right now. So yeah.
Cool, dude. Mate, I feel like we could probably talk about it for the rest of the day, to be fair.
There's loads to cover, but yeah, I appreciate it. You're a busy man.
Thanks for coming on, dude. I really appreciate it. It's been good to catch. It was so good to see you in Miami. It's been far too long.
Long time coming. I was waiting for you to rib me for not making it to your party.
Oh yeah, I actually forgot about that, but Sonny didn't turn up to my party in Miami. He was giving it the big guns for the whole day before.
Yeah. And it didn't and arrive. I'd be a bad manager if I blamed Gene for taking us elsewhere when we were literally over the road. But
terrible.
I'm sorry. But I did get to see you play at La La Land the next day. So
no, I didn't even play at La La Land. This is the shit thing. Come on, Sonny, sort it out.
You played at the same spot. It was at the National. So I got to see you there instead. All those parties at the National kind of blurred into one.
Good fun. Mate, good to see you. Keep safe. Let me know if you need anything.
I'll see you very soon.
Really?
In reality. So
when?
Are you doing IMS or anything, or are you back over to the States?
I'm not doing IMS, but I'm back and forth. What are you doing this weekend, actually? Easter weekend?
It's quite open. What are you doing? What's the plan? So you're playing this here, right?
I'm playing London.
What day?
Sunday night. Charlie, right. I think Charlie's coming.
Right, leave it with me, yeah. I might come down.
Just let me know. There's a bunch going on, so if you want to just bounce about with us, then you're more than welcome.
I'm writing it down, Sunday.
We know you won't turn up. It's fine.
I was going to say, we'll see what happens after my last appearance and the fact I was late at the start.
Is Jess been in?
She's got Reading on Sunday. She's got a Capital show as well. Okay. So let's check. Yeah, so she'll be in the area.
Cool, man. All right, dude. Good to catch up. Love you, mate. Keep safe and see you soon.
See you, mate. See ya.
Peace.
Bye.
And that is a wrap. Big love to everyone that came on and listened. Thanks to Sonny for coming on. Keep safe. Please share the podcast. Please subscribe. Please give us reviews. It keeps the podcast going. Much love.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.